Hello and welcome to The Goodness of Man, a conversation from us at Leaning Into Light. My name is Jessica Rios, and today I'm interviewing Gerald Lucian. We will be airing this in June 2020. Again, the title of this conversation is The Goodness of Man. Welcome to all of you listeners. Hello, hello. So glad to have you back. We had a little bit of a bump with the pandemic, and we're back with these interviews for you. These are our free monthly recordings to support you, our listeners, to lean into light. Lean into light. What does that mean? Leaning into light means when you hit a bump in life, which we all do pretty much every day, I think, you recover. You recover from confusion, from judgment, from anger, from all the things that don't feel so good, into feeling good because you're made of love. That's what we believe. And so this is all about supporting you, humanity, to lean into light. Grab a pen so you can pause if you need it and take notes and write anything down that appeals to you today. So I would like to take a moment here to welcome Gerald to our show. Welcome, Gerald.
Howdy.
Howdy. So Gerald is a father. He is a follower of the Tao. He's a custodian of bees and nature. In the wintertime, Gerald is Sonoma County Santa. He lives with his wonderful wife, Suzanne, and their sons in Sebastopol, California. And Gerald, you and I met, I believe, because somebody said, oh, Jessica, there's these really good eggs that you can buy straight from the farmer. And I was like, oh, that's cool. Like, that's really cool. I want to do that. So I found you. And suddenly one day we're getting eggs delivered to our porch. Is that what you remember too?
And I do remember that. Yeah. I believe, I don't remember how you contacted me, but I do remember that you contacted me and asked if I had farm fresh eggs available. And at the time, yeah, we were delivering all over Petaluma. We were doing 135 dozen eggs a week.
Holy moly.
Delivered. Yeah. That was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So here's my, you know, 4-year-old daughter seeing eggs brought to our porch. And that was just a very sweet way to meet. Why I wanted to interview you, Gerald, so this goes straight to the essence quickly. You're used to that with me. Gerald, you are a uniquely beautiful person. You are a man with a lot of wisdom, and you touch people in a way that's, I don't want to say special like it's a hierarchy, but just you have wisdom that you share with people, and it enhances people's lives. And I wanted to bring that about for my listeners. And it connects to why I called this talk The Goodness of Man. And I want to share that, especially with the men on the call. No, not especially, with everyone. And that is, man has done some things that are not cool. Historically, man continues today in this moment, if we all actually contemplated the number of things that man is doing in America beyond that is really unloving, it's a lot. However, there are so many men who are carrying this beautiful discipline, this devotion to be good, to be kind, to be honest. When you get feedback, to be open and learn from it. When you have a strong knowing, to share it. And you carry that, Gerald. And so I wanted to share as a, I guess, a bit of a tribute to man. Because I love man. I don't have fear of man. Man is wonderful. So let's put that out there and invite all men to be in their kind self.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Some very kind words.
Yeah.
Thank you.
It's the waterfall of Jessica. So let's start, Gerald, as we dive into this conversation. You had a major life incident that happened...
2009. Yeah. St. Patrick's Day, March 17th, 2009. Yeah.
So it was a crash. And you've shared with me about this. I'd love for listeners to hear. I'd love to just know basically what happened. And then how did it shift your life? Where were you? Where did it take you? How has that shifted your life?
I was kind of on a path of... moving in another direction from where I had started out in life at, as far as coming out of high school in a traditional, you know, public school education, getting an associate's degree at the JC in accounting, business administration, going into business for myself. At one point, after years in the accounting field, working in corporate, you know, retail, manufacturing, just various industries. And then opened up a cabinet shop for myself while I was running an insurance agency. And shortly after doing that, I had had a third eye awakening. And with that, I started to do acupressure and body work, energy work specifically, with clients, customers. And so the day of the accident, I was with a client, just gotten done with a session, and I was walking out to my vehicle, which normally, because I would have my massage table and my stool and a bag, you know, with sheets and whatnot, normally I would have taken my wife's vehicle because she had an Xterra backloading vehicle that, you know, I would have been loading the back of. But today, that day, I had taken my truck because Suzanne had needed her car for something specific. So I had taken my truck, which was a dual cab, quad cab vehicle. I come out of the client's house. I go to open the door of my truck, the side door, to passenger side door, to put the stool in the front. And as I'm doing that, a woman had was not paying attention, was speeding up the road, came around a semi-blind curve, and hit the car that was behind me, sideswiped it. As she sideswiped it, she turned in towards the curb, and that hit the back of my vehicle with such force that it threw my car about 15, 20 feet forward. And in the process of doing that, it grabbed the stool that I was holding because the door clamshelled shut, and it twisted my body like a pretzel, really. My feet didn't move, so I suffered multiple injuries up and down. And that, coupled with having Crohn's disease and suffering from that for years and having a bowel resection and whatnot, with that ultimate physical injury happening there, it kind of put me out, and I've been on the disabled list since then.
Ever since. You went into an ambulance?
I did not go into an ambulance. So it was odd because the vehicle never touched me. When her vehicle came to a stop, her front right tire was just hovering over my left foot, and the front end of her car, which had been smashed back about a foot and a half because it went under my truck, was about an inch and a half from my belt buckle. And so, you know, a little bit more and she would have wiped me out.
Right.
If I had taken Suzanne's car that day, I would have been loading the back of the vehicle and I would have been cut in half and possibly killed instantly.
Right. So you went through medical work though, no?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
I had to get an
operation on my left knee. Mm-hmm. I have sublux of the left shoulder. I have cervical strain. I have lumbar and sacral strain. They call it myofasciitis, which is like fibromyalgia, mm-hmm. kind of.
Well, as you were talking a little bit earlier before the call, and we were talking about this crash, you said, you know, it had a serious hammering on your life. A lot of very challenging results came from that crash.
Yeah.
How would you say the crash benefited your life? Because you also said many great things have come from that experience.
Well, the sequence of events following that were about 6 months after the accident, we had to declare bankruptcy because my cabinet shop had to close, and you know, we had equipment that still needed to be paid off as far as, you know, credit card bills and whatnot. That went under. My insurance agency, I was not able to service my clients as I had been before because headaches and physical, you know, just not being able to get out of bed, you know, being able to move, hold a phone, you know, things like that. It you know, affected my hands tremendously. I'm, you know, being someone that worked with their hands in more than one way, and that having stopped so suddenly was a real big for me for a long while. So, so 6 months after we declared bankruptcy, and about a month or so prior to that, we had moved in with my wife's cousin's ex-husband.
Okay. Yes.
And at that time, he was living in a country property.
Yeah.
And I was born and raised in Runner Park, you know, city boy. I shouldn't say I was born in Runner Park, but I was raised from 4 months old on till 24. I lived in Runner Park. And so I was, you know, pretty much a city boy in that regard, but still loved and respected the country and always longed for it. I guess it's in my genes. My father's from Iowa and grew up on a farm. And so I always had that, you know, that desire, if you will, to live off the land and work with the land. We fortunately had a huge backyard growing up. Mm. So I was able to go out there a lot, spend a lot of time alone back, you know, out there, just being with everything that was out there, you know, discovering spittle bugs and ladybugs and digging holes and seeing what came out of the earth and looking at the roots of things and just seeing the structures of everything going on. And so we move out to the country, and at this point, my oldest is 7. So they were still quite young, and this was one of the things that was really hard for me, was not being able to physically play with my sons for the rest of their childhood. Basically. That, you know, I try not to think of it too much because it hurts a lot to think about that. I didn't grow up with my father, so all of a sudden now I am home with my kids a lot more, which that was cool. I was able to, because we were now on a farm type property, I was able to start doing things. And shortly after moving there, we came across a rooster and we named him Buddy, kind of in honor of my grandfather, whose name is Bud. That was what everybody called him. He was actually, I'm named after him, Gerald, but everybody called him Bud. And so I named the rooster Buddy, partly because of a joke too, actually, because my grandfather does not like chicken. He worked in a processing plant as one of his jobs early on, and he saw how chickens were processed, and since that day, he did not eat chicken. Mm-hmm. So, but Buddy, once we got Buddy, we obviously had to get some hens for him, and so we got, the first hen we got was from a friend of mine, and her name was Goldie. She was a Buff Orpington. And so we had the start of Buddy's farm and the start of Goldie's Best Eggs, which that kind of fizzled out as far as a name brand, but everybody knew him as Buddy's Eggs from that point forward.
So would this not have happened if it wasn't for your crash? No, this was a different course.
This was a different course completely, because the course that I was on, I probably would have come to this point eventually in my life. And hopefully I would have been able to be physically able in that, course. But again, you know, other things happened, and, it forced me to do things in different ways, to learn different things that I had never done before. In way different ways.
Yep. And so one of your sort of like ways of being that I've experienced, and this is just me, but it's just, you bring a lot of wisdom to your presence. You bring wisdom to your conversations. And I look back at this, and as I think of all the listeners that we have here today, you know, humans seem to require pain to learn. We do. I'm not outside of that. I thought maybe I can learn some big things without pain, and maybe I have, but pain has been part of my life and part of my learning. And it sounds like for you, this crash, this car situation, you know, really led you into some different ways. So anyone out there today who's listening and you're going through something that's real painful, I just want to extend a moment of love to you to say that I'm sorry for the pain, and I really am. And that I believe in you, and that I know that you can make something beautiful out of this if you haven't already. So Gerald, I want to hear, you are a student of the Tao.
Yeah.
So for people who don't know what that is, a quickie on that one, but you bring this into your life, you bring it into our friendship. What would you like to share about that at this time on earth and this time in America and right here in Sebastopol, California? What is the Tao?
The Tao means the way. That's the closest literal translation from the Chinese that you can get to.
Okay.
And basically what it is, is it means, it's a description, it's 83 verses, I think it is, short poetic verses that are no more than two or three stanzas. Some are a little bit longer, but they typically tend to break down. So it's very simple language. Lao Tzu was the author, pronouncer of the Tao Te Ching. It was meant to be a guide on how to exist in the natural order of things.
Mm-hmm.
And not just nature, but also human nature, the nature of animals, the nature of all living creatures, the nature of the universe,
mm-hmm.
The nature of everything beyond that as well. And when we talk about religion, you know, we talk about these mysteries of religion, and the Tao certainly has a lot of mystery to it. And some treat it as a religion. I treat it more as a philosophy, just as a way to view the world, and as a way to interact with the world.
Mm-hmm.
In a more positive, quote-unquote, manner, you will.
And there have been many times when you and I have been talking and you've said, the Tao, blah, 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 whatever it brings to that moment, right? And I think, wow, that's so fascinating. Do I align with that? Do I not? Usually I do. I think it's really beautiful. So for you, let's just say at this point in your life, or at this point in, let's say, if any of these things appeal, you know, you respond to that, but what we're going through with this pandemic, with coronavirus, what would the Tao say to people about that?
There is so much the Tao would say about
yes.
it. There are so many, facets to everything that goes on, and people tend to, I don't want to say politicize, but people will tend to put things into one of two categories when there are way more than two categories that exist.
Yes. Ooh, okay. I hear you.
Yeah. So of what facet of the pandemic would you like the Tao to address?
Yes.
You know, would you like it to address the way people are handling it? Would you like it to address whether it's following a natural order of things or not? Would you like it to address what are the future consequences, and consequences not being a bad word per se, of this?
As you ask me those questions, I recognize you are a student. You study the Tao. So you are able to say from the Tao, wow, let's not be black and white, because that's just not how the world works. Let's look at the facets of this, and let's take, what do you want to see about, you know, all these questions you're asking me? As I hear those questions, for me, as I shared in the intro today, this is for humanity. To lean into light, to me, is a massive, 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 deep and beautiful lesson for all of us as humanity. So when you say, do you want to talk about the piece that says, how are we being with this? You know,
that's
is this in
resonates.
The natural? Yeah. Is this in the natural order? Fascinating. I mean, all the things you say practically are fascinating to me. But the question about how are we being with this? And I'll tell you why that appeals. I'll give a little more. As I go out into the world, as I go to the market or the post office, which is pretty much the only things I'm doing these days, you know, I notice so much fear. And I'm not seeing it. It's not a practical. It's like, it's in my gut. Wow, these people, there's a lot of fear. And And I love these people. So it makes me sad because I don't believe we're born to live in fear, but I believe we're born to work through it. So why are they afraid? They're afraid because there's this virus thing, right? And we're being told to be afraid and all this stuff. So what do you see through the eyes of the Tao around coronavirus and around how people are being? What would the Tao say about that?
The Tao would simply explain why people are acting the way they're acting, why people are saying the things they're saying. When you look at the symbolic representation of the Tao, the circle with the two fish, if you will, the black and the white, with the black and white dots in the opposing colors. When you said, you know, not everything's black and white, this is true. Not even the Tao is black and white. Not even the Tao, the symbol of the Tao, the yin yang, not even that is black and white. If you truly understand how to see it, so the white part of the symbol is yang, represents yang energy. Yang energy is an outward expression of life. It is light, it is hot, it is up, it is rising. Yang is the force of life. If we were to put it into religious terms, you would say that yang is the Holy Ghost or the spirit. When we talk about the yin, that's the black part of the symbol. Yin is the essence of life. Yang also represents what would be considered the masculine. But if you look, there's a black dot within that, mm-hmm. which is the mm-hmm. showing that within yang there is yin. Mm-hmm. So masculine doesn't necessarily mean 100% male aggression, blah, blah, blah. So now we look at the black, the yin. It is down, it is solid, it is nurturing, it is nourishment. Yin is what is considered the fuel of life or the energy of life. Yang creates yin, and yin creates yang. They are opposing forces. So when we talk about good and evil and positive and negative, these terms, first of all, the term good and evil, they get erased in the Tao.
Mm, I love it.
There is no...
So I need to start teaching my 7-year-old about this.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay.
Everybody should learn this. You know, great leaders of the world learn this. Great generals that go to battle, the Tao Te Ching is one of the books that they read amongst, you know, Sun Tzu's The Art of War.
Even in the American military?
Yes.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
You have to know how the Tao, there are several verses in the Tao that talk about military and conquest and whatnot. Mm-hmm. So much in the Tao, and yet it's so simple. And I've listened to it, I don't know how many dozens of times. And every time I listen to it, I hear something brand new.
There's something new.
Or something that correlates to something that I just was thinking about or questioning or whatever. So,
yes.
And I have it on my playlist on my phone. So as I'm out and about listening to my music, sometimes it'll just randomly pop on and I'll go,
that's
sweet.
Exactly what I needed. Yeah. But as it relates to, yes, that's
hey,
right.
Big Red.
That's right, guy. Yeah. As you can hear, we're outside. So as it relates to the coronavirus and how people are being, and you know, you've gone deeply into as deep as we could in the last
mechanics.
5 minutes. But yeah, how does this relate to how people are being with it?
So people are reacting in different ways and coming from different places.
Yeah.
Some people are coming strictly from fear. And unfortunately around, you know, Sonoma County and Northern California over the last 3-4 years, we've had major fires that have ripped through communities, killing, you know, thousands of people. Destroying hundreds of millions of dollars in property and devastating landscapes, you know, just taking out wooded areas. And I don't know if you've driven through any of these places, but still to this day, nothing is growing, you know, other than the normal, what would grow back slowly, you know, but the trees have not recovered, and you know, that's the lungs of the world. So, so we've got this heightened sense of anxiety already going on. You know, Sonoma County over the last, you know, I've lived here all my life and I've seen floods. Floods was usually the biggest thing. It used to be the biggest thing that would happen around here. And over the last 4 or 5 years, now it's these fires. People are at a heightened sense of anxiety, and the smallest thing will push them to react in ways that they would not normally react.
So is that where you see us being? Some of us?
Some of us, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We were alert because our grandfather's house just burned down with everything in it that was going to be mine. I probably haven't grieved that, because who do you know that really fully goes through their grief in this culture, right? Then suddenly there's this virus, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So are you saying, yeah, that some of us have,
Yeah, and there's also been a buildup as far as disease goes. This has been something very prevalent in California, you know, especially. And actually across the United States, but in California, we've been having this debate about vaccinations and disease and the spread of disease, and we've had media fear-mongering with, you know, and disinformation about all kinds of things. And, you know, we had the SARS that was going to kill us all. Then it was Zika. And then measles was right before coronavirus. And we haven't heard a word about measles since the coronavirus came out. So, yeah, everybody's just so on edge.
Yeah.
And everybody's got core beliefs about things.
Yeah.
And there's also things happening. There's book burning going on right now as well. You know, for some people that would say that, you know, that, oh, that's disinformation or misinformation, it should be destroyed. There's a lot of stuff that was on the internet prior to, I would say about 2010, I was starting to do a lot of research on various things, because I had time. This was shortly after my accident, and you know, all of a sudden, you know, the internet is just booming, and Google, you can Google anything. And there is information that is no longer available online. And that's saddening. Because I see people that talk about the Nazis in regards to Trump, or, you know, the Republican Party, or the conservative Christians, or this or that. And then I see the other side saying, talking about Nazis and social democracy and, you know, this and that. And both sides have really valid points, you know?
So part of what I'm hearing and what you're saying, if you were speaking to 100 people who had gone into, you know, a bit of fear and maybe kind of anxiety, and they're sort of not in a great place about the coronavirus and the state of the world and all that, right? Can you blame them? Maybe not. I mean, right? It's an intense world to live in.
Right. That's why I say there's so many facets to come from.
And what I hear you saying, and push back if this isn't what you're saying, is that you're inviting people to be more mindful, to slow down a little bit and notice, what are you saying? What are your values? What are you speaking for? What's here?
Yeah. Is what I'm saying about this subject, does it line up with my core values? There's a lot of that going on, you know, where there's a lot of name calling, there's a lot of, you know, people bashing.
Right.
And this was something that was, that some of these people that are now doing this were 4 years ago going, hey, you can't do that. That's not right. You know, you can't call me blah, 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 you know, and now here they are doing that, you know, and again, I see it on all sides of it.
Yeah.
So,
and fear is a very, very powerful thing.
Fear and love, two of the most driving factors in the human world.
Yeah.
And fear is the most easily accessible.
Okay. Yeah. Right. 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 Beautifully put. So I believe love is absolutely the most powerful force in the universe. And that humans were not quite to the point where you just said fear is more easily accessible. Love that wording. Fear is just, it grabs us first. Oh, you're going to push me out of the raft into that rapid? Shit. Excuse me. You know, that's how I feel when I'm in a river like that. You know, love, we're not quite
knee-jerk response. Your fear, you know, flight or fight.
Yeah.
That is, you know, the kidneys. So Chinese, the Tao also is representative of a lot of things. It's mostly used in Chinese medicine where we talk about the five elements. Kidneys, are your most yin organ. They are, you know, if you don't have your kidneys, you die. Mm-hmm. You know, you take one kidney out, you're on half life support. Mm-hmm. You lose that other one, you're not going to be living. Mm-hmm. Sorry. Mm-hmm. You know, you can lose most of your liver, it will grow back. You could cut off half your stomach, you can still get nourishment into your body. You lose your kidneys, you're gone. That is your yin. That is also where fear and anxiety come from. Mm. So when we live in a society that is draining to begin with everything we're bombarded with daily, environmental pollution, you know, whatever form it's coming in, whether it's prescription drugs or bad food, you know, poison food, you know, preservatives in our food, sterilized food. These are things that are not meant for us, you know, and a lot of people are recognizing, you know, oh, fermented foods. Guess what is in fermented foods? Guess what probiotics are? They're bacteria. They are germs. They're yeasts. They're, you know, there's these things that sterilized food that you're getting in a box, in a bag, in a can, just don't have, you know? Mm-hmm. So when we return to the earth, which is our body, our physical body, when we return to that earth and make that, you know, you want to talk about climate change, you want to talk about fixing the earth, let's fix our own earths first. Mm-hmm. And if we do that, the natural consequence of that action will be that our outside earth gets fixed as well.
Right.
Because we will have no choice but to do so
right.
in order to fix our own earths.
Yeah. Beautiful. An invitation to everyone to tend to yourself, tend to your body, tend to yourself. Don't spend all your time looking out there at the freaky, crazy world, because it is a freaky, crazy world. Just focus in on yourself. That can bring you peace of mind. That can bring you into a more stable state of awareness, of mindfulness. So the people who are around you are going to get more presence from you and maybe a calmer friend or dad or et cetera. So I'm going to shift gears a little bit. So you, okay, I know you as my egg guy and my honey guy, and really you're my friend, you're a dear friend. And yet I just know you one-on-one mostly because that's how I like to go in life. That's sort of my way. But yesterday I was here with you and your friend stopped by and you said, I really want you to meet this person. And with all our social distancing good behavior, I met your friend Julie, a lovely woman.
She is, yeah.
And she said at one point, if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't be the person who I am. She said this to you, and I thought, wow, okay, so you, Gerald, are not just the awesome Gerald like you are with me, with just me, which I didn't think you were, but it was a really beautiful moment to experience somebody else who really, really values you. So I don't even know what I want to ask you about this, but I just want to say that I appreciate that.
Thank you.
And I see you, and I wish for everyone to be the kind of friend that you are and to have the kind of impact that that you have on people.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It's easier to do with some people.
Yeah, for sure.
And it's not done with everybody. I try to do it with everybody, but not everybody's accepting. So.
No, not everyone's accepting, and you're also human.
Exactly.
You may not have.
I have my own emotions to deal with.
Yep. Well, let's not put Gerald on a pedestal. I'm just saying. You're a cool cat.
Thank you.
And I want to have a couple more questions. So, I have one more acknowledgement before we move on. And that is maybe you want to share a bit about this. But once we were talking and you said, you know, I have friends on both. Nope. You said you caught yourself and you said, no, I don't have friends on both sides. I have friends on all sides. And you stopped and you really caught my eye contact. And you said, because there's more than one side, you know, you were really in this moment of pointing out that we so black and white life, but it's not just like, come on, people. I want to say, come on, people. It's not just like Republican and Democrat world. Like right. What kind of insane sickness have we gotten into to think that it's just that split up? So just say a little more. That's a fascinating statement. And what do you have to share about there being an all, not just a both?
Well, we tend to think of things linearly and instead of cyclically or circular. When we return to the earth, when we return to the Garden of Eden, so to speak, we start to recognize that life is not linear. Life is cyclical. You know, there's just recently in the news, there's the 17-year cycle cicada is about to emerge from the trees. You know, there are not just 17-year cicadas. There are 26-year cicadas. There are 23-year cicadas. There are, and there,
what's
and
a cicada?
A cicada is an insect, similar to, like a grasshopper, maybe kind of would be my closest,
okay,
you know, for the layperson. Uh-huh. But they live in trees. I don't want to say they hibernate, but they lay dormant for multiple years at a time before they emerge. And, when we look at that through the eyes of the Tao, what we see is that and this is going to tie in beautifully. I just thought it. Each of those species of insect or species of cicada, because across the insect world, multiple species of insects have these cycles of life where they're spaced out from each other. Mm. Because if the world were to suddenly, or an area were to suddenly be inundated with every single species of every single insect at the same time, it would mean deforestation and just complete annihilation of the landscape. Mm. So what you get is a natural cycle, cycles, where individuals get their turn at feeding and taking part in the world. Mm. And then once their turn is done, it's time for the next one. So if you do the math on these things, you know, the closest cycle to anything like matching up same time is like 350 years. So even if every 350 years you get multiple species of the same insect coming together and just annihilating a forest, there's going to be 350 more years for that forest to recoup. Mm. And here we are as one species of being on a planet that has billions of species on it. Mm-hmm. And we're all here all at once deforesting the planet.
Yep.
Yep. Instead of recognizing the cycles and just taking what we need, you know?
Yeah. Somebody once said to me, she's an elder, and she said, Jessica, life is sad and beautiful. And I just was stopped in that moment because how simple is that? Life is sad and beautiful, and it really is.
It really is. It's as simple as yin and yang.
Yep.
Yet so complex.
There you go. Yeah. Yep. Oh, humanity. Tell us, Gerald, what have you loved most about being a father?
Oh, my God. that was a life changer as well. That was, I've loved everything about being a father. Mm. I don't think there's one specific thing that I have not loved about being a father.
You have two sons.
I do. Yeah. They're currently 18 and 15. My oldest just turned 18. Yeah.
Yeah. What is one of the biggest things that they've taught you? Yeah.
Besides patience.
Uh-huh.
They've taught me a lot about love, a lot about love. you know, not to dive too much into my childhood, but, you know, it wasn't completely full of love, and the love came with a price.
Yeah.
So to be able to give them an unconditional love was my greatest gift from them.
Mm. Oh yeah. Oh God. That is so stunningly beautiful. You said to be able, say it again, please. To be able to give them, for you to be able to give them unconditional love was your greatest gift from them.
Yeah.
And you have tears in your eyes.
And it's my boys.
Those are your boys. And I just want to share that to me, and the listeners can't see your beautiful face right now, but to me, this is a beautiful man.
Thank you.
This is the goodness of man. That in this moment, you're strong, you're big, you're all that. Who cares? You're a heart beating with passionate, deep adoration for your sons and for what they taught you. Through all the pissy moments of being a dad, this came through.
Yeah.
And, you know, may I just send out a prayer into the universe. May all little boys be shown that they can cry, that it's human. I just hate the thought that you're told that you shouldn't, you know. But thank you to your sons for giving you that.
Yeah.
And may all parents receive the gifts that our children are absolutely, completely, 100% meant to give us. I'd love to hear just one last piece from you, Gerald, and that is vision. It's about your vision, not for your family, but if you could put out just even a little glimpse or two about your vision for the world, if you could dream up something that you could make real, what do you want to see for humanity, for the planet?
Oh, wow. I would love to see a return to the Garden of Eden. You know, a return to the simple things. You know, we were given such a great nurturing and nourishing planet, and we've simply ignored it. You know, there's so many religions and philosophies and spiritualities that talk about the abundance of nature. Whether it's, you know, the Christian and Judaic Garden of Eden, or, you know, Nirvana, or whatever, we have forgotten these things. You know, we used to be able to just roam and take things that we needed, and it didn't belong to anybody. It belonged to everybody. What are we on this earth? 8 billion-ish?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We didn't get that way by, you know, corporate food.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah.
We got that way by the abundance that the earth has to offer.
Yeah.
You know, and
yeah,
we've learned a lot along the way.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of farming practices and agricultural practices are starting to return to the quote unquote old ways.
Uh-huh.
You know, of not tilling the earth and destroying it and permaculture and all kinds of things like this. So I think that there's, you know, my hope is that we can return to that again soon.
Yeah.
So that we can all live in peace.
Yeah. Well, it's so beautiful. I share that vision with you. And to listeners, if that resonates with you, which I know it resonates with many of you, you know, take that time today. It's a day. You have a day, or you have a night in front of you, or you have a day tomorrow. Take that time to connect with the earth. It's such a gloriously beautiful earth, and it gives you so much. And I will say that my peak experiences, if I could tell you 10 of them, 3 of them or 5 are my body, this body I've been given for this life, and the earth, and just being in it and on the rocks and in the river and just touching the earth. She's such a, there's snakes and there's poison oak and stuff, but mostly she's just so welcoming and amazing and so generous, and she keeps me humble. So thank you for that. Thank you for your vision. And thank you for being the kind of man you are. You're human, you mess up, and largely you're such a gorgeously wise and present being. And I thank you so deeply for that, Gerald.
Thank you.
So listeners, I want to thank you for being here today on another edition of our Leaning into Light conversations. I appreciate you for all the work that you do on a daily basis to lean into light. And even on a day when you totally mess up and you're a jerk and you are not listening to life, you're still loved. Remember that. So if you want to find Gerald, if you're in Sonoma County, you can find him on Facebook with Buddy's Farm, Sonoma County, to get some really good honey. And coming back to it, we'll see you again probably next month. Show love today with somebody by sharing this with somebody who can use an uplift. I know people are listening to a lot of podcasts and stuff these days. These are our monthly interviews. Once again, you can find them all on our website blog at leaningintolight.com on our conversations page. We're not on social media. That makes us a little crazy, so we're off. So please sign up for our newsletter, which you'll get about once a month if you can. And thanks so much for being here today. Have a good one.